Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Gathering on Signs of Life Radio. Our panel is here, Tom and Melissa Gould. I'm Bob Ginsberg. Fran Ginsberg is here. Tonight's sponsor is the Comlock Center, and that's you can find them on the web at Comlock, K-A-M-L-A-K.com. Tonight, we're going to be discussing what grief is, what grief isn't, what it may not be what we all think it is.
Not what you think it is.
Any way you want to cut it, that's what we're talking about.
Well, we'll confuse you no matter what. So,
before we get started, you want to catch us up?
Sure, I do. I always want to remind our listeners to check the events page regularly on our website. That's foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Just to let our listeners know about the free events coming up this month in February. We have February 10th from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern, that's 11 to noon Pacific, and everything in between. The Visionary Explorers Group meets online. Also on February 10th from 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, the Afterlife Discussion Group in Miami, Florida meets. And on February 11th from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, the Afterlife Discussion Group in Sanibel, Florida meets. Our Holiday of the Earth Raffle 2018 is up and running on our website. Win up to 5 medium readings with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums Amy Utzman, Angelina Diana, Dustin Livers, Rebecca Ann Lo Cicero, and Dave Campbell. The drawing is set for Earth Day, April 22nd. Winners are selected randomly by a computer program from consecutive numbers assigned at entry. It's only $5, and that $5 goes a long way to supporting the programming of Forever Family Foundation. And don't miss our next Afterlife Luncheon, May 6th. This event was a total sellout last October, and the next one promises a very special look at the afterlife as attendees spend a day with two people who have all the answers. Lloyd Auerbach, one of the world's leading parapsychologists and a respected expert on ghost hauntings and poltergeist phenomena, teams up with Forever Family Foundation certified medium Kim Russo, star of the TV series The Haunting of, as she will connect with those in spirit who will lead her to their loved ones in the audience. Plan to be at the Hilton Long Island Huntington in Melville, New York for this full day, which includes a scrumptious luncheon. Our first webinar of the year is next week, February 7th at 9 p.m. Eastern, and features Dr. Raphael Kelman presenting Kabbalah and Life Afterlife. The webinars are $6 for members and $20 for non-members. And get ready to sign up for this summer's grief retreat in Chester, Connecticut. Mark your calendars for August 17th through 19th, 2018, and watch for early bird rate announcements in your inbox. And please, please, please help us keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It's on every single page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that all other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. You can also help us pay our bills by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, Amazon Smile, and great nonprofits. Okay, Bob.
Okay. And so we're going to begin our discussion about the nature of grief, why grief may not be what you think it is, and really what we really want to talk about is things that we can focus on to change the way that we think. Psychologists will call it cognitive behavior therapy. If we change the way that we think about things, we can have dramatic effects on things like grief. So ancient civilizations, if we start there, and some of the ancient cultures and some that still exist in the world today, they look upon death as differently than we do. They look upon it as a celebration of moving on to the next step. Hard concept for us to think of death as a celebration. But you know, they think that we finished, when we pass, we finished what we were sent here to do. And then, you know, death is moving on to something to be honored. So when I think back, we've all had grief in our lives, you know, sitting here. And just imagine if we grew up in an indigenous, you know, culture, like in one of these tribes in the Amazon, you know, where they believe, similar to these ancient civilizations, that ancestors, the ones that passed before them, play an integral role in their society. And do you think that we would have had the same levels of grief that we had now if we, I mean, do you think that they grieve the way we grieve?
No. I doubt it.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah. It's hard. You know, it's making me realize I must be the oddball, because just even with, you know, my family raising me to believe in all of our, you know, believing in the afterlife, I have to say that those closest to me and my family, there hasn't been a grieving process. There's sadness. That's about it. Mm-hmm. There hasn't been any mourning period. And I mean,
what do you attribute that to? I mean, the way that your family,
yes,
brought up and thought,
and not on Tom's side, it was my side.
Yeah.
And I don't want to even cite instances, because I'd be like, oh my goodness, Melissa. But but you're making me realize how different from the people I encounter at our events, from the people I encounter making my hugs from heaven. So I guess I'm not, I don't know if I'm, well, I guess I'm a good person to answer this question, because, yes, so it's been an alternative to what I mostly see around myself.
Well, what you said before about changing how you think, I'm reminded of a poster that I've seen often that says, we are not bodies with a soul, we are a soul just using a body. And that way of thinking lends itself very well to the celebration, that, you know, you're a soul that's here. You came in, you're using this physical body, and when it's done, you're moving on. And it's not an ending, it's a beginning. And you celebrate, just as you would celebrate a birth, you'd celebrate you know, the death, the passing on, and freeing your soul to go on to do something else, you know, armed with whatever you learned while you were here.
I have to agree with Melissa, and I don't think Melissa's unusual, because I talk to a lot of people during the day in the office, and there are always situations here and there where I'm speaking to somebody who has that exact deeper understanding. Not that they were taught it. I mean, at least in your family, you were brought up to believe that. But this is, a lot of times people have a deeper inner knowing that the person was here for a short while. That person was here with a gift to you. And that because they're no longer physically here doesn't mean they're not here. And that they have completed what they came here to do. So there's that knowing that is deep within our souls, and maybe it goes back to our ancestral roots or not, I don't know, but in considering the ancients and the way they celebrated the passing of somebody, you also have to ask yourself, did they also have a way of communicating with them regularly? Because they did glean guidance from the other side as well.
Right.
So that helps through what we normally now have created, a situation called grief.
Mm-hmm. And I can see how, you know, it's common knowledge that everybody grieves differently, you know, obviously. But I can see based upon what Melissa said and, you know, what you said, we certainly grieve differently, you and I, Fran, because we, you know, in my mind, you know, death was absolutely final, and the separation was forever. And I, based upon what I thought, and when I say what I thought, that was based on my education and my culture and my society and my, you know, medical doctors, there was no possible way. So, you know, so I was lost in oblivion, whereas you had some of that inner knowing that we never discussed, you know. So, and I think that probably holds true in your family. I remember you talking about having table tilting and things, you know.
Yeah.
You know, not, you know, there was no table tilting going on in my family, I'll tell you that. So, but you know, it's something that I think that's a big part of it. If you see, you know, death as being final and being extinguished, you have to do everything that you can to change that line of thought, that thought process, to enable to move forward. I can move, we'll let some light into your life. We're going to take a break, come back. We have a lot more to talk about. Stay with us.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's KAMLAK.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
Am I Psychic is a mobile app designed using statistics, science, and parapsychological protocols to test psychic ability using fun games. Each game has two unique modes. In psychokinesis mode, influence the game using mind over matter ability. In extrasensory perception mode, guess which random option will be chosen. Am I Psychic can store your results in an anonymous database used to eventually publish in academic journals. Available on the App Store and Google Play. Go to ampsychicapp.com and be a part of proving psychic phenomena to the world. Some profits will be donated to the Ryan Research Center.
We all grieve in different ways, and let's face it, grief hurts. Losing a loved one is usually the hardest event we will ever face. We can throw our hands up and become hardened by our grief, or we can take positive steps to transform it. Love Knows No Death, a groundbreaking and powerful grief transformation method, can be what you've been looking for to provide some peace and understanding. It was created and written by medical doctor and professor Dr. Piero Calvi Perissetti, and it's a combination of a self-help workbook and video course. The workbook has the power to lessen grief and foster significant healing, and has already helped countless people to not only lead productive lives, but to do so with the knowledge that they will indeed see their loved ones again. The workbook can be purchased for $19.95 on Amazon or on the ForeverFamilyFoundation.org Grief and Loss page, where a digital version is also available for $9.95. Love knows no death. Truer words have never been spoken.
After After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
And welcome back to The Gathering on Signs of Life Radio. We're talking about grief and maybe and the reasons why we grieve and maybe what, it's not what we think it is and what we can focus on. What about this concept of finishing what we came to do? A lot of people have a hard time grasping that. But we know from near-death experiences, that's what a lot of them say, that, you know, why did you come back? And I didn't want to come back, but I was told that it wasn't my time. So is that something that, I'll start with you, Melissa. Do you believe in that?
Yes,
that,
I do.
That we all have, so does that mean that we all, our life on Earth is pre-planned, that we have an entrance and an exit point, do you think?
Well, I do, and I think there's some, because of free will, I think there's a little bit of leeway with that, and I do like it as an explanation when somebody young passes. You know, we don't know what someone's blueprint is, but they do, and so it might not make any sense to us why somebody, even children who either die before they're born, you know, the moms carry them, but then the baby doesn't survive the birth. And I had heard in a friend's reading that this young mother was told the baby just wanted to be wanted. That's the only reason that child started to grow. It was a baby that wanted to be wanted, and it definitely was wanted. And that was the only purpose that it had come here for.
Yeah.
I mean, that could, other people could say, oh, those are, you know, very nice words to calm someone, but in this case it was someone who didn't, it was decades later, she had not been focusing on that at all, but it came through in a reading. But at any rate, I do believe
it's that. It's an explanation that makes sense, because what always bothered me was, you know, so you'd read about somebody having a narrow escape and a harrowing experience, and then the people would say, well, you know, this is, you know, a miracle from God, or this is a, you know, divine intervention. And then the next day, you know, somebody is walking in the same spot and gets hit by a car and dies, you know. So where was the miracle then, you know, like, and where was divine? And the explanation would be that, you know, the person that died fulfilled his, what he came here to do. And maybe it, you know, the other person did not. So, I mean, it's an interesting way of cleaning up that argument. You know,
there was I had read a story. I believe it was back to those stories I read through Guidepost Magazine. They have mysterious ways, and many of those stories, I've shared some of the stories with our group. And this was a young man who, and I don't really remember all the details, but he was in a college dorm, and the dorm, I think, caught on fire, and he somehow found himself outside on the lawn, and he sort of recalls a woman, you know, carrying him through the window, but he never could figure out why, but he just sensed he must be here for a higher purpose. And yet in his case, he then spoke about leading a rather ordinary life, and I guess he kept waiting for his big purpose to be revealed to him. But it doesn't have to be something big. Just living your life and the people you come in contact with, it doesn't have to be a big, huge
result. Right. It could be not necessarily anything you do, but in something seemingly innocent or non-consequential that you do that affects somebody else mm-hmm. in a big way, and that was your purpose, was to put that person's path in a certain direction. So yeah, you can never second guess exactly what it is that you're here for until you've done it, I guess.
Yeah.
And I've had a couple of experiences myself that I shouldn't have walked away from that I have, and I have felt that. One of the first experiences when I was a teenager, and I was surprised that I was able to survive that, and it started back then, the whole feeling like, well, there is something else that, and started me on my search for what that something else mm-hmm. was, and has led me to being here.
Mm-hmm.
So I do fully believe that, and from experience. And one thing I do want to say is that, for our listeners, and one of the great things that the foundation does, if not the, is our addressing grief and our grief retreats, and how I have seen almost miraculous changes in some people who are very deeply hurting. And what I need to say for people who are listening that are in grief and are tuning in to try to get some relief, we sound somewhat glib at the beginning, well, just look at it this way and you'll be fine. We're not saying that you're going to be fine necessarily, that yes, there is a component of grief that you can make less painful, but you're still going to miss the person. The bottom line is, we fully understand and have had messages from our loved ones who have passed, but we can't call them on the phone. We can't give them a hug. We can't, all of these sort of things that you can't do. And that's going to be with you. But you can alleviate the pain. And as Bob said, you can get to a place where you can enjoy the rest of your life. And of course, what I've seen at the grief retreats is once you realize and have been shown that your loved ones are not gone forever, that they are there and you actually be able to be with them again, that's the real comfort. And again, to what we spoke about before, if you're changing your thinking, if you can get your mind wrapped around the fact that your loved ones are around you and still involved in your lives, that's where the comfort really lies.
Yeah. And then, so then you would ask, well, how do you change your way of thinking? Easy to say, So there are various things that you can do to help that process. One is obvious. learn about the evidence that says that we've survived a physical death. Have plenty of quiet time, where you meditate. Mm-hmm. Detach from, we live in this information world. Everybody walks around constantly with the cell phones and computer screens and everything else, and there's no time to just sit and reflect. A lot of people think that being out in nature is helpful to a certain extent, because in nature you kind of sit back and see a bigger organization and interconnectedness that perhaps is even bigger than death, and a lot of people, take solace and find comfort by being in nature. We talk about paying attention to things that happen, that don't dismiss them as coincidence. Embrace them, reflect upon them.
Write them down. Keep a journal. I think that's one of the most important things, because at those moments of doubt, you go back and you open up that journal and you read all the entries, and that brings you back to the conclusion that we've been misled. They're still here.
Mm-hmm. I'd like it, too, if people kept, you know, most people have a mirror in their bedroom, and if you got up in the morning and you looked in that mirror and you had a little post-it on the mirror that just reminds you of your mindset for today, just for this day, just for this moment, you know, I will be at peace and take a deep breath. I think it was Mo Hanna, I think, at our retreat, who you take a deep breath in, your shoulders are up. Breathe out, shoulders go down, and then shoulders back. And it just kind of sets you up for your day. Like, okay, I can handle this. I can get through this day. And go right back into your room and read that message again if your day starts to go downhill.
August Goforth is an author, and he just wrote a book about, you know, grief, and we're going to have him on the show in a couple of weeks. So I was previewing the book, and there's a couple of good quotes that he got from what he terms the risen people on the other side. And one of the quotes made sense to me. It says, "Without a sense of time-generated fear, grief has no lasting reality and no permanent significance." You know, because when we think in terms of time-generated fear, you know, we think it's we have a limited time and that's it.
Right.
And you know, but if you think in the broader perspective, then the grief has no substance. You know, it just dissipates. You know, that was a pretty good quote. And he said, "Feeling your own personal and present immortality will deprive grief of its energy and release the joy of living to rise again." Yeah, so I mean, if we believe that we are immortal and we can, you know, we continue, then the fear and the grief, you know, lessens, you know. So, I mean, let's face it, we all live our lives in fear of death, our own, not only the loss of our loved ones, but our own death, right?
But do we? I mean, do we all? Not anymore.
I used to, yeah. I don't anymore, but you're right. Yeah. And I used to, you know, I used to be terribly afraid of that. You never were.
No.
Yeah, I remember I had surgery a few years ago, and I remember going into the surgery and first of all, surrounding myself with the white light and thinking, well, you know, I may not be here on the other side of this procedure, and that didn't bother me. But what bothered me, of course, was, you know, leaving Melissa and my family behind. I have a fear of leaving them. I don't have a fear of myself going to the next. When the time comes, I'm sure I'm going to be very ready, and I will go happily.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that Tom says that you know, you worry about who you left behind.
Yeah.
Because very often in the near-death experiences, when the person crossing is given a choice of whether or not they can stay or they want to go back.
Yeah.
That's always the reason that they go back. It's because of the people that they left in the physical world.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think of things rather strangely, as Fran will attest to, but I was reflecting upon it. So there were times, you remember times, and you could probably relate, you know, going to law school. I mean, there were times when you had to take a big test and the stress was just, even I remember with me with the SATs, you know, it was building up and the anxiety, and it was affecting the way my appetite and my sleep, and you worry, and then you take the test and it's relatively painless and you do okay, and then the stress that was so all-consuming is gone forever, instantly, and you know, maybe in a certain respect death is like that. You know, we spend our lives stressing and fearing, and then we pass over, and it's relatively painless, and we find ourselves still alive, and the stresses are just a wisp of a memory. And maybe grief is like that as well. I mean, you know, the grief that we all feel, as Tom said, I mean, it's tangible. We, you know, it's horrible. It's painful. But yet, when we pass over, we find out that all that time and all that stress of the grief and all, you know, all that pain was unnecessary. We just have a total different perspective on things. So.
I think that's an Einstein quote, actually.
What?
About having to do with stressing here until it's time to go.
You're saying I plagiarized?
Maybe. We should check in with them.
You and Einstein, you're always.
Yeah, you know, I was skimming the internet, and I took a look at some of the prestigious organizations and how they treat, you know, grief. So the School of Medicine for Palliative Care at Stanford University, their quote was that many bereaved people cherish their memories of the dead person, who is often felt to be near at hand and may even be perceived as a transient hypnagogic hallucination or illusion. These phenomena usually provide comfort and should not be seen as denial or indicating a need for psychiatric help. The hypnagogic hallucinations may persist indefinitely. They are distinguished from psychotic hallucinations by their transience. They disappear when people wake up. So, you know, they're advising, you know, they're you know, professionals that they don't even entertain the possibility that these are not hallucinations or illusions, you know, that they're real. The Mayo Clinic was a little bit better. They said, in life, we are vulnerable to changes all around us, and it's natural to search for ways to protect ourselves. To know more about grief does not protect us from its place in our lives. Instead, grief can call us to find change within ourselves. We grow in our continued quest to explore meaning and purpose in our own stories and transform our perspective. That's a lot more forward-thinking. That was, the Mayo Clinic health system. And that's, we talk about that a lot. I mean, how many of us, after the horror, you know, find some renewed mission or purpose or meaning, because as we try to make sense of all that, well, most, you know, a lot of people. Right?
A lot of people do. I think, you know, sometimes they go off and it's a while before they find the right footing for what they're doing.
But, well, and even those who do share their experiences in a book, and I know there are quite a few of those, but that person's focus on getting their story out and then the process of turning it into a book suddenly shifts their focus from the grief that they just wrote about to, oh, now I've got a book to get out. But so it's another adventure that is distracting them from their grief.
You know, so, I mean, I think what we're saying in all this is that we grieve because we love our loved ones, and we perceive that we lost the connection. But if we believe that, or we come to believe that we're still connected, that will enable us to, as Tom said, it's not going to make the hole in your heart go away, but it certainly eases a lot of the pain and allows us to move forward. And that's what we always talk about, is keeping those connections, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to go to our second break, and we'll be back in a few minutes. A lot more to talk about, so stay with us.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HGH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
Hello, my name's Piero Calvi Parisetti, MD. I invite you to discover my video course on Evidence for Life After Life, a professional counseling resource for the bereaved and the dying.
Transform the fear of death. Heal the pain of a loss by learning about life after life.
For more information and a free preview, visit www.drparisetti.com. That's drparisetti in one word, .com.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
We all grieve in different ways, and let's face it, grief hurts. Losing a loved one is usually the hardest event we will ever face. We can throw our hands up and become hardened by our grief, or we can take positive steps to transform it. Love Knows No Death, a groundbreaking and powerful grief transformation method, can be what you've been looking for to provide some peace and understanding. It was created and written by medical doctor and professor Dr. Piero Calvi Parisetti, and it's a combination of a self-help workbook and video course. The workbook has the power to lessen grief and foster significant healing, and has already helped countless people to not only lead productive lives, but to do so with the knowledge that they will indeed see their loved ones again. The workbook can be purchased for $19.95 on Amazon or on the foreverfamilyfoundation.org grief and loss page, where a digital version is also available for $9.95. Love knows no death. Truer words have never been spoken.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
And welcome back to The Gathering on Signs of Life Radio. We're talking about why grief may not be what you think it is and what we need to focus on. We're really defined by the physical world, right? I mean, if I were to ask you to tell me who you really are without telling me your name and your job and your hobbies, what you like to eat and things like that. I mean, it'd be really difficult to tell me who you really are, wouldn't it?
You're looking at me.
I think he's always looking at you.
It's our seating position. Yeah. I think you're right, though. It would just be some attributes that you would probably...
Yeah, I mean, we define ourselves as our bodies, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you might tell me your height and your weight and all that stuff, but that's... We're so consumed with our physical bodies that we don't think of the essence of who we are. And I think that plays into grief. If we're oriented towards the physical world, it's a block. It's like a blockade to this understanding of the intuitive side.
So then if we became a culture that would learn once again how to communicate telepathically... Mm-hmm. And work on us ourselves as existing as energy, not the same energy that you do in an electrical socket, but energy as we speak spiritually, then when the physical body sheds, then we've got that connected connection already. It's
yeah.
there. It's permanent. We've worked on it while we were here in the physical, and now we still have it. So maybe we have to change the way we live. And if we change the way we live, maybe like the ancients did, we can eliminate this process of grief.
Well, we could be moving in that direction. You know, it's hard. The you know, when we talk, there are so many professionals that give you advice about grief, and they will tell you that grief is normal and grief is healthy, but I think you brought up this point, Fran, is, you know, maybe we grieve because we're taught that that's what we're supposed to do, you know.
But we didn't actually, I don't think we were taught it like you went to school and you learned English and you learned mathematics. It's culturally taught. I mean, when we're of some certain age and a family member dies, you get taken to the funeral, you get taken to whatever ceremonial things are going on, and you get to see everybody else and feel the energy of everybody else who's sad. So we've grown into this culture. It wasn't like this all along.
And we're guilted into it as well. I mean, there were the times when you had to, you know, wear the black armband for a certain amount of time, and, you know, God forbid that you should laugh while you're wearing a armband. Aren't you grieving? What are you doing laughing? I mean, that kind of thinking definitely can change. That yes, you are in pain. It's real pain. Nobody's going to deny you that pain, but you know, have a laugh. You know,
I kind of remember when we were kids, the commentary on Jackie Kennedy not mourning long enough.
Yeah.
You know, that's where our culture is going.
Yeah.
That's where our culture is going. It's like they've decided how people have to feel and how people have to react. And now we feel guilty if we laugh or if we smile after somebody dies.
Yeah, I also think that, I mean, I'm, you know, a big fan of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, but, you know, I mean, I thought that it was somewhat of a disservice to label stages of grief, you know, something that she later, I think, you
she
know,
retracted
regretted. But so then people, it makes it even worse. Oh, what stage am I in?
Yeah.
I'm not supposed to be in, I'm in that stage, I'm in this stage. I mean, to me, it's nonsense. I mean, grief is so complicated, and it's all jumbled up together, and then the stages will come in waves, you know.
Well, the reason it's complicated is because there's no roadmap.
Right.
It's just this cultural bombardment of different people's visions and expectations of what happens when somebody dies.
Yeah.
Well, that's perfect, what you just said, because you don't know how to act, you know, until you're in it, because everybody's afraid to even bring up the subject. Oh, whoa, we don't talk about that. You know. Oh, well, mommy, what happens when you die? Oh, well, let's not talk about that. Because
right.
I guess people feel like if you talk about it, you're going to bring it on, which I guess in some of our thinking, you will. So it's a tough one to go down.
Yeah.
You know, my mom at 94, she's kind of made her world kind of small. It's just us family members. But she has enjoyed a visit from one of our mediums, and so I have arranged for her to have a visit again with one of our mediums, and she's very excited about it. And the other day she said, just casually, well, I don't know how much longer I have, and I said, well, you know, now we know, I won't name our medium friend, but I said, well, now I know which medium I'll go to talk to you. She goes, well, that's something to look forward to. So it's like, you know, I'm not going to be discussing her demise, but I'll talk to her about what's going to happen next.
I think my observation is a lot of people, when they reach a really old age, kind of that fear, you know, dissipates. I think that leading up to it, you know, maybe people my age start to think, about their own, you know, mortality and, you know, somewhat, you know, fearful of it. But, you know, I like talking to my father yesterday, you know, who's 90, you know, what'd you do? I went to the supermarket, you know, I bought some bananas. They're green, but I'm optimistic. Hey, Dad.
I think at that age, it might kind of go back to the fear again, because you're at that age, you know, you're not going to live forever, but how will it end? I'm not sick, I feel pretty good, but I'm
at that age. Is that fear or is that mystery? See, we are looking at things the wrong way. We're constantly being taught to look at it the wrong way. It's a mystery.
How about it's like, you know, someone will be coming to the door, but you just don't know when.
Right.
So you're not frightened, but you're not sure.
Woody Allen says, "I'm not afraid of dying. I just don't want to be there when it happens."
Right. Right. But see, that comes from the fear of death, because we watch it on TV and it's always painful.
Right.
But what we understand from a spiritual aspect is that the soul leaves the body at the moment of death. So there is no pain. And I think Dave Kane tells that story about no pain really well. If our listeners ever read the book, 41 Signs of Hope, he tells this wonderful story about there being no pain.
Yeah. And also, in years past, remember, people used to die at home. You know, they weren't shuffled off to, you know, to hospitals or to hospice, you know, they just were surrounded by family. And if you talk to people that work with the dying, like in hospice, to a person, they all describe the dying process as something sacred. You wouldn't think that, but that's common. Everybody refers to it as something sacred. It's they can't even put it into words, you know, that it's just it's like an honor, you know, and a privilege. And that's, you know, that's something that in today's society that, you know, we've lost, you know, that people, it comes from the avoidance of death. I don't want to be around, let others, you know, take care of it, you know.
And we did have that experience with Tom's mom, which we've shared before, but she did happen to be moved into hospice, but we were there and we were right by her side. And it was like an honor. It was like, oh my goodness, how fortunate were we that we got to
share. I was struck on how natural it was.
Yeah.
It, you know, I imagined, oh my gosh, you know, to have to witness my own mother dying, what I felt like, you know, it would be like being in a horror movie. And it wasn't. It was just so peaceful and
natural.
That is the word that I, right away, I said, you know, I'm amazed how really natural this is. This is part of our existence, and it's not horrifying.
No, and especially what we, you know, have come to learn, you know, that it's. I think the reason they say that it's like sacred space, because it's, you're a witness to the straddling of both realms, you know, and you can just about see the soul moving on, you know. So it's something.
And you're tuned in to the moment. Tuned into the moment. It's not that you're visually watching the person cross. You're in that moment with them.
Yeah.
And the energy shifts.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Egyptians, the ancient Egyptians, they, as you probably know, they put more emphasis on preparing for death than they did, you know, for living. You know, with all the bury with the tombs or whatever. I was reading, like, the kings were, the palaces of the kings were built of short-lasting materials such as mud, brick, and weeds and wood, but their tombs were built from stone. One writer said, dying to them was not the end, but merely an event that they had to pass through in order to reach a new stage of existence, to join a different class of being, the dead, who shared the universe with the gods and the living.
Mm-hmm.
Shared universe.
There you go.
You know. They also believe that a person's body would continue to play a vital part in his or her existence after physical death. And that, well, of course, that's why they spend so much time trying to figure out how to preserve the body. You know, to me, that never.
But you see, there you go back to the physicality of the world, that they were under the impression of, well, you pass to the next stage, but you must have to take this body with you. So let's wrap it up really well.
And in other cultures, I was reading from the same article, like in China and Persia, they develop complex beliefs about the afterlife as well. Their visions differ, but they're all, as the author said, seem to have been driven by a desire to understand how death fit into what it means to be human and what happens to us after we leave the world that we can now experience with our senses. So, you know, we think that we're exploring life after death now, but, you know, we're not the first ones to, you know, to start thinking of things like that. And then, you know, you took out an article for him that the other day about the article is about grief, but as you pointed out, a lot
the article was about mental health.
Mental health, and they talk about in psychology there's a term that they use for learned helplessness. It's like, you know, when people come to believe that they're powerless or incapacitated to change their circumstances. And I think a lot of people get caught up in that learned helplessness and grief, too, that this is the way it's going to be forever. It's, you know, it's powerless to change it, and there is no possible light at the end of the tunnel, and that's unfortunate. But we do see, as Tom, you know, mentioned before, you know, in the foundation, that people... We have seen people move from that helplessness to a light-filled existence. I mean, nobody flicks a switch, and you know, but
and you got to work on it. It doesn't just happen.
It doesn't come easy, you know.
Right.
And that's a good point, because today we think that you just press a button or hit a key on a keypad to get everything, and smartphones, smart robots, smart this, smart that, and nobody needs to put any work in, but after-death communication, in a lot of instances, takes a lot of preparation and a lot of hard work, right?
Yeah,
it just doesn't happen. I know Fran always talks about it. She gets calls all the time. You know, people just said, well, you know, she'll say, well, what is it that you're looking for? Well, you know, I want my loved one to come through to me now, this way, and on my terms.
Yeah. And that
doesn't happen that way.
Not only does it not happen that way, but having that point of view actually acts as a block to it happening.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got documented letters and emails and phone calls and all kinds of data that tells us that our loved ones constantly are coming through to us. And yet you have this handful of people who have these expectations, and they never get the visits.
Yeah.
They never get them. So there's that balance that you have to achieve in understanding that we survive and then being a part of it and working with it.
And again, as we talked about, you can't force these things to happen, and we've talked about even with intention, right? You have the thought, you put it out in the universe, and then you let the universe take over. You can't force the universe to do anything.
Right.
I think that the misleading word is intention, because that implies something that you want to hold on to.
Right.
And it's the exact opposite.
Yeah. It doesn't work until you let it go.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. You going to wrap us up?
I'll be happy to wrap you up. And speaking of which,
like
I love
mommy. Exactly what I was thinking.
Go gather some stones. I just wanna give you the well. Let me just give you the Einstein quote that we missed earlier. One lives all one's life under constant tension until it is time to go for good.
Yeah, he stole that from me.
So now we like to ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Ashley Jackson, Robin Murray, Marianne Pierzga, Isabel Ginsberg, and Matt Mello. Now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.